नमो तस्स भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा संबुद्धस्स। हेलो, दिस इज लाल फ्रॉम पियोधम्मा.नेट। आई हैव हैड सेवरल रिक्वेस्ट्स टू पब्लिश अ डिस्कोर्स और देशना ऑन द थ्री कैरेक्टरिस्टिक्स ऑफ नेचर विच आर समटाइम्स कॉल्ड थ्री मार्क्स ऑफ एग्जिस्टेंस। In Pali, it is called Tilakkhana. These are nature's laws that apply anywhere in the universe, just like the laws of gravitation or the laws of relativity that apply anywhere in the universe. I have been postponing this desana because I was not sure exactly how to even get started. This is an English-speaking audience that may not have had much exposure to the true teachings of the Buddha. I finally came up with a non-traditional way to discuss the subject, and it could take another desana or two to cover it all. I would appreciate receiving comments that you may have, so that I can prepare my next desana on this subject to take account of those comments. I have opened a new forum on three marks of existence, anicca, dukkha, anatta, at the discussion forum to focus on this set of desanas. The key to getting to the sotapanna stage is understanding tilakkhana. So this is a very important subject. First, we need to set up the background. In his very first desana, Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, the Buddha said that his teachings are not like anything the world has ever seen. That is called Pubbe Ananusutesu Dhammesu. That means Dhamma that has not been heard before. So what it means is that we cannot think about the concepts that he introduced, the Buddha introduced, just by thinking along conventional ways. Even if one is a genius of the caliber of, say, Einstein or Newton, one will not be able to understand anicca by thinking along those conventional ways. I am very serious about this point. There are some people with PhDs that I know of who cannot grasp these concepts. I think that is mainly because they are trained to think in a certain way. On the other hand, there are many average people who have no problem of understanding these concepts. It is easier for most people, especially those in the Western world, think about any concept in terms of existing concepts. And that is the way one has been trained to think at home, in school, and at work. This is why it is easier to make the connection with anicca as impermanence. Anyone can see that a person grows old and dies one day, and that things we use every day will break down one day. So it is easier to accept impermanence as anicca. It is reinforced by the Sanskrit term anitya, which does mean impermanence. But anitya, the Sanskrit word, is not the same as anicca, the Pali word. Same is true with dukkha as just suffering. We all think we know what suffering means. We have been sick, injured, and we get sad when we lose people that we like and love. Some people even think that those sufferings in this life can be stopped by meditating. However, dukkha saccha, or the first noble truth, is different than the dukkha or the suffering that one feels. Dukkha saccha is about the suffering that can be stopped from arising. So there's a difference between dukkha and dukkha. The additional kha in dukkha means there is a dukkha or suffering that can be removed. Kaya means to remove. So dukkha means dukkha or suffering that can be stopped from arising. That is why it is about future suffering. Then there is the explanation of anatta as no self. The Buddha clearly said that both self and no self are two extreme views. But for many people, the concept of no self sounds very sophisticated and enticing. They start meditating saying that I don't exist, or there is no self, or something to that effect. So these conventional interpretations of Tilakkhana have kept the pure and true Dhamma in the dark for many hundreds of years, as I have explained at the website. If one is to make progress on the path of the Buddha, one must be prepared to give up these artificial ideas. This is not easy because as humans, we like to believe something the easy way. If someone promises to teach how to get to the heaven by killing other people, many people are tempted by such claims. They are too lazy to think through the consequences of such horrible actions. Other people have less drastic belief systems. There's a large group of Buddhists in the Western world called secular Buddhists. They are highly moral people, and even many well-known bhikkhus belong to this category. You can Google secular Buddhist and read about it. They are highly moral people, and they just want to adopt certain aspects of Buddha's teachings to live a moral life and help others too. While one can live a peaceful life that way, one should not expect to end the suffering in future births by taking this approach. However, most secular Buddhists do not believe in rebirth, so that does not seem to be a problem for them. So you can see that from the case of secular Buddhists, why they will never be able to comprehend Tilakkhana. They are unable to see that there is a possibility of much more suffering in future lives than what we experience in this life. They do not see the difference between dukkha, the suffering that one can feel, and dukkha, the future suffering that can be stopped from arising. They will not be able to comprehend the dukkha satcha, the first noble truth, because that is all about stopping future suffering. If one does not believe in rebirth, then there's no point even to learn about the noble truths. Therefore, right from the beginning, any hope of magga phala is blocked for secular Buddhists. Same thing applies to those who do not believe in the laws of karma. Now, I must emphasize that believing in the laws of karma does not mean that karma is deterministic. I have several posts which describe why one's future is not bound by previous karma. By purifying the mind, especially by comprehending Tilakkhana, one can overcome past karma. Maybe it is better to say that one can bypass past karma. That is why Nibbana is possible to attain. Karma is a powerful law of nature. In the days of the Buddha, there were Brahmins who believed that everything happens due to past karma. The Buddha explained that some past karma can be overcome by new karma, done with wisdom or panya. Cultivating panya requires learning about Tilakkhana. So karma is what we think, speak and do. We have total control over new karma, but we don't have much control over the results of past karma. This is an important point. and it is hard to understand for many people. I may need to have a future desana on this subject, but there are recent discussions at the discussion forum on this subject, especially under the topic, could bodily pain be due to causes other than karma vipaka? One should also realize that what we discuss here is not modern science or philosophy. Even though many concepts in Buddha Dhamma have been proven to be correct by modern science, there are some things in science that are not correct and will be proven so in the coming years. I have made some predictions at the Dhamma and Science section. One thing that strikes me when I look at online discussion forums is that people say things based on what they hear from scientists and philosophers, even if they are not compatible with Buddha Dhamma. One should realize that both science and philosophy have evolved over the years, and many concepts have been revised, especially in the recent years, with the discoveries in quantum mechanics and relativity. On the other hand, Buddha Dhamma has not changed at all over the past 2500 years. Here I am referring to the Pali Canon, the Tipitaka. Of course, sometimes things appear contradictory, but that is because bad translations of Pali verses in the Tipitaka. But I am not saying that one should straight away start believing everything that I say or someone else says about Buddha Dhamma. But one should be at least skeptical about claims by scientists and philosophers when they go against the Tipitaka. At the website, I have given many examples. One can never really comprehend what this suffering and that it can be overcome, or what dukkha is, until one comprehends what anicca is. When one starts seeing what anicca is, one will also start seeing what dukkha and what anatta are too. Let me say it again. When one starts seeing what anicca is, one will also start seeing what dukkha and anatta are too. Another thing that is also quite clear to me is that one cannot even start comprehending these key concepts like anicca, dukkha, anatta without realizing that dasa akusala can never be good, and that Michcha Ditti or wrong views are one of the worst of the Dasa Akusala. One must try to get rid of the 10 types of wrong views or Michcha Ditti. That is because one's speech and actions are based on one's set of beliefs. No matter how brilliant one thinks one is, one cannot even begin to start comprehending Buddha Dhamma without cleansing the mind to some extent. This is discussed in the post Buddha Dhamma in a Chart and also in the Mahachattarisika Sutta. When one starts following Buddha Dhamma seriously, it may not be easy to get rid of some bad perceptions that one has accumulated. Sometimes concepts in Buddha Dhamma are so contradictory to mundane established concepts that it is not even advisable to force them to the mind. Instead, what one should do is to spend time reading and thinking. The mind needs to see evidence in order to change from the old ways. So let us take a simple example. Some people cultivate metta bhavana by reciting, may all be happy and healthy, or may person X be happy and healthy. Is it possible to make anyone healthy by doing that? Our physical body is the result of previous karma and we have to live with many types of physical discomforts, injuries and sicknesses. Of course, we can avoid some, but not all. One cannot even make oneself fully healthy, let alone others. But it makes one feel good reciting that mundane metta bhavana. Of course, it does have a slight effect, and I am not discouraging it. The deeper truth is that if one can get to the Sakadagami stage of Nibbana, then one will not be reborn in the realms below the Deva realms. It is only in the human realm and the realms below that sicknesses and bodily pains are part of one's life. Therefore, one who gets to the Sakadagami stage will be forever healthy because they will never again be born in the human realm or the lower realms like the animal realm. Therefore, in Arya Metta Bhavana, what one does is to contemplate on unimaginable suffering that living beings go through in these lower realms and make a determination to get oneself to the Sotapanna and Sakadagami stages of Nibbana, and at the same time to help others get there too, not only in one's mind but also with one's actions. The other version of this meditation is to recite something like, "May all beings be free of suffering." What most people have in mind here is for people they know to be free of ailments, injuries and sicknesses. Again, this is something that does not have much effect in reality, even though it may have some slight effect. The main point to think about is most of the suffering that we undergo have been set in motion when we were born with this physical body. This physical body resulted due to past karma vipaka and will not stop until this physical body dies. This is a basic principle in science. Results appear due to causes and results will be in effect until the energy of that cause runs out. For example, when one throws a stone up, it will go up until that initial energy runs out. If we need to get more stones up in the air, we need to give energy to them by throwing them up. In the same way, what we can do is to stop causes for future bad results. Most of our bad experiences are due to past deeds or past karma. Of course, we can act foolishly and create more bad experiences right now. For example, if we decide to jump from a tall building, that is a new karma and it will bring immediate results or immediate karma vipaka by making one dead or at least injured. Now, a deeper aspect of this cause and effect is not fully grasped by science yet. This is the fact that for past causes to bring in effects or vipaka, suitable conditions must be there for those to take effect. And science does not know about this because this is mainly in effect for mind phenomena. So these mind phenomena may not automatically lead to effects because there must be suitable conditions for them to bring the corresponding vipaka or results. Just having causes is not enough. That is why we can avoid some karma vipaka too. An example that I frequently talk about is the germination of a seed to give rise to a plant. A seed has the potential to bring about a plant to existence, just like a past karma has the potential to bring vipaka into existence. However, unless that seed is put in the ground and is provided with water and sunlight, it will not germinate. It can be kept in a cool, dry place for thousands of years without germinating. Therefore, even if the cause is there, the result can be delayed by not providing suitable conditions. Just like that, we all have done past karma to be born in the apayas like the animal realm or in the deva or higher worlds. It is at the moment of chuti or at the moment when the bhava energy for this human bhava runs out that our mind will grasp a new bhava or a new existence based on the condition of our mind at that moment. This is a very important point. For example, if one has been engaged in immoral activities in this life, it is easier to grasp a bad bhava or a bad existence. However, even more importantly, even if one has lived a perfect moral life, it is still possible to grasp a strong bad vipaka. That is something that is hard to understand for many people. The possibility of grasping a bad bhava or a bad existence in the four lowest realms can be permanently removed only by attaining the Sotapanna stage of Nibbana. This has been discussed in the subsection on the Sotapanna stage. Therefore, if one really wants other to be really free of future suffering, then one must be thinking about how to help that person to attain the Sotapanna stage and help one attain that not only by wishing so, but also doing whatever one can to help. Furthermore, when one does the formal bhavana with this deeper mindset, it makes the bhavana thousandfold more effective. That is the Arya or noble version of the Metta bhavana. In the language of Abhidhamma, the power of a Javana Chitta can be magnified with one's understanding of Tilakkhana. So the knowledge is very important. The key point here is that no one can attain the Sotapanna stage without comprehending Tilakkhana. That means Anicca, Dukkha, Anatta. Those three marks or three characteristics describe how the nature operates. Just like the laws of gravity are universal laws and apply anywhere in the universe, Tilakkhana are applicable throughout the whole universe. Therefore, the best way to help others to be free of future suffering is to help them understand what is meant by Tilakkhana and then to follow the Noble Eightfold Path to get release from suffering. Understanding Tilakkhana is like getting access to an accurate map showing the path to Nibbana. Once one can access that map, then one just has to follow the path indicated in the map. And that path is the Noble Eightfold Path. However, before we can help others to understand Tilakkhana, each of us need to understand them. Tilakkhana are nature's laws, not laws of the Buddha. They are in effect whether there is a Buddha in this world or not. A Buddha only discovers these laws. Just like Newton discovered the laws of gravity or Einstein discovered the laws of relativity, the Buddha discovered Tilakkhana, Paticchasamuppada, Noble Eightfold Path and other related laws. They are all related to each other, but Tilakkhana lays out the basic understanding one must have in order to understand the other laws of nature like Paticchasamuppada. All living beings except those who have attained at least the Sotapanna Anugami stage have the following three misconceptions or wrong perceptions about the world. That is that things in this world have the Nitya nature, the Sukha nature and the Atta nature. In short, this means that we believe that there must be some ways to get what one wants, be happy and thus to have things under control. You may want to hit the pause button and think about it. A normal human has the idea that there must be some ways to get what one wants, be happy, and thus to have the things under one's control. In other words, a normal human has the wrong perceptions of nicca, sukha, and atta. So let us discuss those three terms, nicca, sukha, and atta, which are the opposites of anicca, dukkha, and anatta. As we will see later, understanding what these terms, nicca, sukha, atta, is very helpful in understanding their opposites, the tilakkana, anicca, dukkha, anatta. A nicca nature, which is the opposite of anicca, implies a sense of predictability, a sense of safety and happiness. For example, if I get a good job, all my problems will be solved kind of mindset. Then that implies a happy future for oneself. That is the perception of sukha. If both those are true, that means one is in full control of one's future and one will never become helpless. And that is the perception of atta, the opposite of anatta. However, think about all those successful people who got their dream jobs by becoming kings, presidents, actors, scientists, doctors, etc. Did a single one of them get rid of all his or her problems and lived happily thereafter? Of course, on the surface, most of them appear to live happy lives. But each and every person has day-to-day stresses. And as one gets old, it is inevitable that one will have ailments. Sometimes one may come down with cancer, or most of one's wealth may disappear due to some unexpected event. Even if one lives a perfect life, the suffering associated with death can never be overcome. At death, one will have to leave all one has accumulated, including one's loved ones. However, I do not want to give the wrong impression of discouraging anyone from working hard to get a good job. As I have pointed out many times, one needs to get a good education and get a good job in order to avoid falling into misery. But one should always be mindful that it will not solve all of one's problems. So the point is that instead of being nicca, the real nature is anicca. Instead of experiencing sukha, one mostly gets dukkha. And instead of becoming atta or protection, one becomes anatta or helpless at some point, definitely at the moment of death. And this process continues into future rebirths. If the rebirth is in a lower realm, there is nothing at all one can do in that life other than to endure that suffering. One will just have to bear that suffering. That is what anatta means. One really becomes helpless if one is reborn in a lower realm. This is how most animals feel. Even though it is horrible to think that we could be born as an animal, that is a definite possibility, unless one has attained the Sotapanna stage. That truth may be painful to hear, but it will not go away by not thinking about it. As I said, tilakkana are universal laws of nature. Even a Buddha cannot change them. A Buddha can only discover those laws. What we need to do is to at least spend some time and think about the whole of the Buddha's message instead of just taking parts that we like. And that is what these secular Buddhists do. These are the hidden truths that we don't see. These are the previously unknown teachings that the Buddha talked about. Pubbe ananusutesu dhammesu. This is the very basic idea, but there are many aspects to those deep truths. In another example, we don't see the suffering hidden in sense pleasures. We all have seen small flies landing on the hot enclosure of a light bulb and getting burned to death. This is a very painful way to die. They are attracted to the light and don't see the hidden suffering. When a fly sees the light, it immediately gets the sukha sanya or the nischa sanya. The light appears to be pleasing and it gives a sense of what is called nichata to the fly. But we look at those flies and right away see their problem. They get attracted to the light and cannot see or figure out that the enclosure is hot and deadly. So we say, how foolish are they not to see that the surface is hot? But a fly is unable to see that, it can get burned. But the point is that whether one knows the real nature or not, it does not matter. The result is according to the nature's laws. Here, a hot surface will burn the fly regardless of whether the fly knew about the danger or not. Even though we can see how dangerous it is for those flies to have the desire to get close to that pleasing but deadly light, we don't see the hidden dangers in things that we crave for. That is hidden suffering that may not be immediate, and that is why we don't see it ourselves. Unless a Buddha comes to this world and explains how these sense pleasures can be dangerous, we are unable to see that for ourselves. So the bottom line is that there are many things in this world that appear to be of nichcha nature. But when we look deeper, we can see that most of those are really of anicca nature. And that is what this discussion is all about. If something eventually leads to suffering, even if it brings immediate happiness, that is of anicca nature. That is the main idea. So let me repeat. If something eventually leads to suffering, even if it brings immediate happiness, that is of anicca nature. However, it is also important to realize that seeing hidden dangers in normal sense pleasures should be actively pursued only after getting to the Sotapanna stage. There is a more immediate task to be handled before that. First, we need to see the worst aspect of sense pleasures are realized if we do immoral things to get them. Before we worry about the consequences of the cravings for normal sense pleasures, we need to see that the worst aspects of sense pleasures are realized if we do immoral things to get them. This is very important. If one tries to reject right away what we call harmless sense pleasures, one may get even depressed. We have to go step by step. The first step is to avoid the worst of the dasa akusala, which are killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, lying, gossiping, slandering, and uttering hateful speech. In other words, actions that can bring suffering to others. Those are obviously immoral things that we sometimes tend to do in order to get sense pleasures. So we need to realize the dangerous consequences of such actions, that they can bring bad karma vipaka in the future. The way they bring future vipaka is what is explained in Paticca Samuppada. The vipaka will be in accordance with the karma that we do. That is why it is called paticca leading to samuppada. You may want to read the section on Paticca Samuppada to see the details. Then the next step is to try to be less greedy and less hateful. When we proceed that way, within weeks or months, we will start feeling the Niramisa Sukha or a general peaceful state of mind. This is what I try to explain in the first subsections in the Living Dhamma section, and also in the first few posts in the meditation section. You may also want to read the post on Bhava and Bhavanga Simply Explained. That post describes how one's mindset can affect one's behavior. If one's mind is agitated, it is hard to understand the deep and new concepts of Buddha Dhamma. This is an important point, so let me give an analogy that I learned from my noble teacher. Suppose there is a sign by the side of the road and a person is running back and forth in front of it. Now, if the letters are small, one would not be able to read the sign while running in front of it. But if one stops by the sign, then one can read the sign. When one's mind is contaminated to a relatively high degree, it tends to be agitated. Trying to understand a deep and subtle point with a contaminated mind is like trying to read that signpost while running back and forth in front of it. No matter how many times one runs back and forth in front of the sign, one will not be able to read the message. In the same way, when one's mind is agitated due to defilements, it is not possible to grasp what is meant by Tilakkhana, no matter how many times one reads about them. It is true that one can get to a state of calmness with techniques like breath meditation or even just focusing one's mind on a single thought object. However, that calmness does not last long. It is better to get a longer-lasting calm state of mind by reducing those strong dasa akusala. As I have tried to emphasize with many posts, one's mind is covered by two layers. One is due to the 10 types of michcha ditti, which includes not believing in the laws of karma, not believing in rebirth, not believing in the concept of Gandhabha and Paralova and so on. It is easier to stay away from dasa akusala when one's mind gets rid of the 10 types of michcha ditti. When this first layer is at least partially removed, one gets to mundane samma ditti. And at that stage, moha or moral blindness is reduced to just avijja. Avijja simply means ignorance of Tilakkhana and the Four Noble Truths. Once those 10 types of michcha ditti are removed, one can make progress on understanding Tilakkhana. That is the removal of the second layer covering one's mind. However, it is not possible to get rid of this second layer until the first layer is reduced at least. It is important to realize that all dasa akusala are removed only at the arahant stage. Those three marks of existence or the three characteristics of nature or Tilakkhana are understood in four stages of Maggapala and is completely removed only at the arahant stage. At that point, both layers covering the mind would have been removed. Actually, one could do the following experiment. If one does not grasp some aspects of this desana, one could try to get rid of some of those strong dasa kusala and come back and listen to it after a week or a month or sometime later. There is no question that we all do dasa kusala to varying degrees. We can always get better at reducing them. For example, there are many people who consistently avoid killing, stealing, and sexual misconduct, but have a harder time avoiding those done by the speech. Also, we can always try to control excess greed and hateful or angry thoughts. It is also important to realize that reading and listening to Dhamma must also be done at any stage. It is just that understanding gets easier as one's mind becomes less and less contaminated. Furthermore, getting rid of the 10 types of michcha ditti makes it easier to stay away from the sakusala. The 10 types of michcha ditthi are, in a way, responsible for the tendency to do the sakusala in the first place. So that is basically the mindset that one needs to be able to comprehend tilakkhana, anicca, dukkha, anatta. We have finally come to the point of actually discussing tilakkhana. However, it is important to have that discussion because just merely reading about tilakkhana is not going to do the job. I cannot emphasize enough the importance of setting up the mindset to be receptive to the deeper aspects of tilakkhana. So this desana took more time than I expected. When I started writing down the key features to be discussed, I realized that each aspect has more deeper layers. Furthermore, I also realized that it is important to discuss nicca, sukha, atta before getting to anicca, dukkha and anatta. So we will continue the discussion in the next desana. May the blessings of the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha be with you always.